We'll try to move quickly through the Makoros again in the different areas, just to compare what needs a kinui, what needs a shame, what is shame on Yuchad, when the shame on Nikra, when the shame on Nikta. Again, we're going to try to do this quickly. But in addition to going through the Rambams that I told you about and so on, some of which we'll discuss already today, after we just finished getting through a little more of the Shachmataria, also look at the, Moshe was holding back on this, but, right? Right? Exactly. So, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Beis, and like Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Chava. The grace, of course. Yeah. The piece on Makalel as Kavero, B'Shem, which is Perek Chavav, I forget the exact halacha, in the Chidush HaGris, and also the piece on Megadev. We'll probably add some things also, but on Perek Beis, right? So, it doesn't necessarily mean that, I'm going to call on Moshe for that. We already know that he knows it. So, but, it can go either way, really. So those two, addition. And, of course, the Ravid, I think Ravelva mentions it, as I recall. I have to look at it again. But at the one in Perek Chavav, I think he mentions that the, also to look at the Ravid, the riff here in the very end, quotes, the Yerushalmi and the different views in the Gaona, whether you get Malkus or not from a Kalal, Eskabero, a Beshem. And then there's this Ravid, which in the old Gemaras at least, I guess in the new Gemaras they probably put it where it should be, but in the old Gemaras they used to put it in the back, like after the Mordechai, before the Bala Itur, before the Mea Shearim. They have in the old Gemara Shavuos, they have Hasagas Haravid on Shavuos at the end. For some reason, they didn't put it on the page. I think in the new ones, they all put it on the page. So you should just, that's the Ravid. Maybe we'll get a chance even to mention it today, but that's the Ravid's comment on one right, again, the last, right Tezaino and base of the Dape Harif on Mekalel Chavero B'Shem. So there's this important Ravid. I just want to make sure I'm giving you the right one. So Perek Shua Sa'edos, Kosev Rav Alpas, Lav Shua, Lav Shua Hein Shua. Yeah, both of them actually. Look at that one. But especially the other one. The Chazina Lagon Damar Loke, B'Shem HaRavid, Aniyah Kayim Divrei Shneim, Darbinon Chutz Minizra Meimer Mekalo Chabeiro B'Shem, Dafka B'Shem HaMiyuchad Bilvad. The Siv Krob, Hifla Shemes Makoska. This little piece of the Ravid, just to, be part of the discussion. Okay. So we were discussing the different categories of that are mentioned even in the Mishnah alone, right? Megadev, Mekalales, other V'imo, Mekalales, Atmo V'es Chavero, and of course Shvuas Eidos is our context, and the question of what you require in all these various cases. That's what we're in the middle of discussing, and part of our discussion was about the relationship between Shem Hashem, there are different levels, Kinuyim, there are different levels, as we'll see, and there are some things that are not Kinuyim at all. The question with regard to Kinuyim is whether or not we consider them to be, a more diluted shame or not, both, qualitatively, certainly. How do we look at them? We know that kinuyim are required and effective in some contexts. Is that because only they constitute a, reference to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore they're mitzaref, not shame Hashem, but Hashem kivyachal himself to whatever is happening, but whenever you need a chefza shel shem Hashem, right, or anything like that, kinui really wouldn't qualify. Is that the point that we're trying to make here? And certainly can be read that way in the Gemara. Again, originally the Gemara thought that Lememra dechanan varachum shemos ninu, that kinuyim are considered to be shemos. When the Gemara thought that was the case, right, initially it went hand in hand with the question of being a davar she'eino nimchak. Again, it's very remarkable, if I didn't emphasize this enough yesterday, so I'll just take a minute now. It's not just that the Havamina was that kinuyim, you know, are shemos. It's that they're shemos ad kedei kach that they're in the mchakim. So, right, even in the first Havamina, in other words. Then when the Gemara says, but how could that be? You know, they don't qualify as reflected by nimchakim. So, as we discussed already, the question is, what is the Gemara giving back? And then when the Gemara gives the answer in the name of Abaya, that, you know, Masisin b'mishu chanun mishu rachum, you know, what are they, you know, recovering? You know, what are they going back to? So this is really the question that we were discussing, and basically what we're suggesting was that, you know, there's basically the two extremes are that kinuyim can be shemos, and that you would apply to them the din that they cannot be nimchakim. That means that the context really establishes them as a chetza shel shem, even to that extent. So then it's kind of all or nothing, but there's a very flexible all, if you will, meaning in context, you know, something can become a real chetza shel shem. That's one extreme. L'halacha, we don't accept that, at least not fully, right? The other extreme, which we're not sure, maybe we do reflect, is that kinuyim is just a reference. And it, again, is just mitzaref, the Rabbonu Shalom, into this, you know, particular halachic institution, but there's no status of chetza shel shem at all. Again, if we take that view, we could still maintain one interesting part of the Havamina, and that is that nimchakim, right, and nimchakim is a shir in chetza shel shem. Okay, but what we have then established, and where the difference lies, is that there are certain institutions in halacha which we thought require a chetza shel shem, right, including shavua, and now we're being told that that they don't, right, that they require tziruf l'ashem, but not a shem hashem. And that is a certain extreme. In between is suggesting that kinuyim are different from shemos, and therefore they're nimchakim, because they're not intrinsic or objective shemos, because we're acknowledging their contextuality, excuse me, they're being, let's say, relative shemos, however you want to call it. But at the same time, what we are suggesting is that there's some sort of a shame status here. And we're, you know, creating a wedge or driving a wedge between the status of chetza shel shem on some level and imchakim. And once you do that, so, you know, the question of how you draw the line becomes really, really important. That's what do you need for something to be a kinui? What do you need for something to be a kinui if it's just a reference and a mitzarev, but it's not a shem, is presumably less than what you require for a kinui, right, which still has some status or some semblance of being a shame. I mean, I can't prove that 100% because you still have some, you know, requirements, even if you're just being mitzarev, and there's greater flexibility even if you take the view that it's a chetza shel shem of some sort, or given its context. But just logically, right, if we find a machloksim, you know, about what constitutes a kinui for certain areas of halacha, right, it could be that the machlokas is about these, you know, threshold requirements, that's where you draw the line, in terms of what you need, either for chetza shel shem or for, you know, kind of a hityaksut, a mitzarev. But it is certainly also reasonable to think that maybe the argument is, you know, revolving around this point, that the more demanding you are of certain standards, even for kinuyim, right, the more you're treating them at least quasi or as some sort of a contextual shape. And if all you need is mitzarev, then you should be more, in theory, you should be more more flexible. So the Gemara's distinction between chanun v'rachum, and then by extension also ha'adir, ha'chazak, ha'amitz, ha'azuz, and so on, and Shemayim Ba'aretz, right, as we started looking at that in this context, noting that Shemayim Ba'aretz certainly, you know, have a huge strike against them anyway, because they are Heftzas, right, that are separate from the Rebbe. Theologically, we acknowledge that. They're brios, they're yitziros, right, they're things that were created. They're not the Rebbe Shalom at all. To suggest that or to treat them, you know, in that way is, I say, the bordering on heresy and Avodah Zarah. Moreover, they have an independent meaning, right? So the question is, you know, to explain why Shemayim Ba'aretz is not enough isn't so hard. If the focus isn't on why Shemayim Ba'aretz is insufficient, but why, you know, Rachum and Chanun, you know, are, you know, proper kinuyim, right? That's a different story. Kim in the lake midiachrina, the ikri Rachum v'Chanun, is a strong statement in the Gemara, because good people, you know, Jews and non-Jews who maybe have earned through their, you know, compassionate, actions and character, you know, the name of Chanun v'Rachum. Right. So this is what we were discussing, and that is the fact that this is Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim, the fact, you know, to use a Mor Nevuchim, you know, approach, you know, that words that we use, you know, in connection with the Rabbanu Shalom have a different qualitative meaning, you know, when used, so it's like, you know, the uber or ultimate or paradigm of Chanun v'Rachum is Rabbanu Shalom. And I was saying even more than that. I was saying, you know, that, you know, if not it, the Chiyuv part, there's, you know, what that means in a bigger way, you know, and in a way that is not just simplistic, but is sometimes complex. Like, how can you embrace, the challenge of Mechiyas HaMalek and still, you know, be a Chanun v'Rachum, let's say. Right? Maybe you can't do that, you know, unless you see Chanun v'Rachum, you know, in bigger and more complex, you know, and divine terms. I'm just giving that as an example. I don't want to get into that right now. I've spoken about it in the past. The idea of kolam rachem ala achzor, sofolios achzor b'malkom rachmanus. I mean, it is an example. So the idea that, you know, if the Rabbanu Shalom wasn't a Chanun v'Rachum, you know, then Chanun v'Rachum would have a different meaning, and it would be more action-oriented or more superficial or more one-dimensional. Those are three different things, though they overlap. Or even more so, that, you know, it would be, you know, or another way to look at it, it would be a ben adam lechavero construct, you know, exclusively. It wouldn't be, you know, something that bespeaks of kedusha necessarily. Like, you can have somebody who just is an amazingly compassionate person, amazingly sensitive, can't bear to, you know, see other people suffer. That's an unbelievable quality. It doesn't necessarily, or does it, you know, have to be, you know, something that relates to his neshama or to the spiritual side of his personality. But even more than that, the idea that I was trying to express was that maybe man's, you know, innate selfishness or his competitiveness, you know, his chayecha kodmim, this is so strong that without imitatio dei, the chi of lehidamos, right, that's, you know, he would never be able to accomplish Chanun and Rachum. So that, many, one of these things, some of these things, all of these things, I think have a lot to do with the idea that Chanun and Rachum, you know, qualify in this way. I'm just pointing out that the Gemara has Shemayim Va'aretz, and the Gemara has Chanun v'Rachum. And I think Chanun v'Rachum and Erech HaPayim and all these, you know, have a lot, you know, to commend them as being, you know, divine-like or divine-esque, however you want to call it. And I think Shemayim Ba'aretz, it's pretty easy, you know, for us to explain why that, you know, is very short. In between, there comes a lot. So we already have the Hei HaYadiyah of power and greatness. And again, I say whatever I just said about Chanun v'Rachum, you know, I think, again, in one case, you're talking about moral qualities and qualities to emulate. Another thing is talking about power or attainments or level attainments. You're talking about Azuz and Gibor. But nonetheless, the Hei HaYedia, which means, you know, not just the most, but, you know, inherently the greatest by definition. And again, I say what I said a second ago, the fact that, you know, I said it yesterday a little bit, you know, that, you know, Gevura and Gedula and all these things have a much more expansive and a much more multidimensional, including spiritual, meaning in connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So, again, I talked about Anvasanuso, but again, Gevura, you know, in the Yitzchak, you know, Yitzchak Avinu sense of being the Amud HaGevura, right, you know, Ezo Gibor HaKoveshes Yitzro, right, the ability, you know, to control your responses and to be disciplined. That's not what Gevura means, you know, typically, you know, outside of religious context, outside of the model of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So I think when you take all that into account, you know, we're saying something much more important, and that is certainly true if you're talking about being mitzare for mityaches, the Ribbono Shel Olam to something. But I'm suggesting that these also may justify saying that, you know, even though it's not an exclusivist term, it is a Platonic, ideal, you know, paradigmatic term, and therefore there's a certain chefza shel shame, you know, even for these kind of kinuyim. So the question was raised yesterday by Natan and then Eitan, right? Where is Eitan? There he is. Eitan, right? And that is, what if you were to say, like Shemayim Ba'aretz, instead of saying Shemayim Ba'aretz, let's say you were to say, you know, Borei Shemayim Ba'aretz, or as a suggestion was made, Kone Shemayim Ba'aretz, right, which we like better. So that, as Natan correctly pointed out, the Meiri does address that question. The Meiri says if you say Borei Shemayim Ba'aretz, that would be fine. So again, in terms of the unequivocal, you know, reference part of it, you know, that's a Davar Pasha. Maybe you don't need the Meiri even to tell you that. There's only one Borei Shemayim Va'aretz, right? And yet, it's, to me, not such a Davar Pasha. So we do need the Meiri to tell us, and it wouldn't surprise me if they were Cholkin. But to me, the issue might be something else. And that is, again, if we need an unequivocal reference, you know, and by that I mean not only that we understand what the person means, maybe you need even more than that. Maybe it should be, like, objectively, you know, unambiguous. You know, certainly Borei Shemayim Va'aretz does it. But if to qualify as a kinui in some contexts, you also need for it to be a quasi or, a, you know, some sort of a contextual Shem Hashem of some sort. So then, you know, the hard work, that's, you know, not suggesting that it wasn't worthwhile hard work, but the hard work of trying to explain why, what the Gemara means when it says, you know, B'mishu Chanun, you know, B'mishu Hurachum, you know, and the same thing with Hagadol Hagibor Mahanora is something that we would then have to embark on with regard to Borei Shemayim Va'aretz. And here I think, you know, you get into all sorts of really interesting issues. One way to look at Borei Shemayim Va'aretz is, you know, those are just like the two most elemental, you know, creations. And, you know, from that point of view, you get the unequivocal reference, but, you know, not necessarily, we're not talking about moral attributes, tchunot, and you're not talking about, you know, depictions of greatness necessarily. So it's, you know, it's factually true. There are many other things also that are factually true, you know, that we associate historically, you know, or, you know, theologically, you know, with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Are all of those kinuyim, right? They're all probably unequivocal references, but not necessarily you know, chefsas shel shame, you know, albeit ones that can be nimchakim in one sense or another. So I think you have to weigh each case. We've made a case for Rachum and Chanun and for, you know, Hagadol Hagibar Vahanora. You know, what about Boris Shemayim Baretz? So if you can Boris Shemayim Baretz is just a feat, you know, and again, and a reference, then maybe not. Another way to look at it would be that Shemayim and Aretz themselves, you know, represent, you know, categories, right? Which they often do, and certainly in the thinking of Chazal, and possibly in some references in Tanakh and Tehillim, Mishle in particular, things like that, where Shemayim Ba'aretz aren't just, you know, the two building blocks, you know, together, I guess, with Tohu and Vohu, you know, according to some. They're not just the building blocks, but they represent, like, the motifs of creation, and maybe, you know, both the scope of it, the magnitude of it, that's one, you know, the ability to do that feat, to create a Shemayim and create a Haaretz, things that in most religions are the deity. You know, that's what I mean by that. The scope of it in the sense of the ability, you know, to create, if we say Shemayim Ba'aretz means, let's say, Ruchnius and Gashmius. And if we go further and say that, you know, the ability to create both of these, you know, the same source to create Shemayim Ba'aretz is like a philosophical attestation of Yichud Hashem, right? Kulam miroa echad, you know, nitnu. Again, in the thinking of Chazal, occasionally, and certainly, you know, many of the medievalists and you know, like in systems like the Maral and others, like Shemayim Ba'aretz, you know, represent that. They represent the scope of creation, the scope of the Ribbono Shel Olam's activity, and therefore, by saying he's Borei Shemayim and Borei Haaretz, but especially saying he's Borei Shemayim Ba'aretz, is saying something very, you know, singular and theological and philosophical and moral at the same time. So then Borei Shemayim Ba'aretz wouldn't just be an unequivocal reference, but it would be like, you know, Chanan Varacho, in a way. Like, you know, Lashem Ha'aretz, you know, Im Umloa, you know, and then Hashemayim, Shemayim, Lashem Ba'aretz Nasan, you know, Livnei Adam. You know, and the whole idea of, you know, Avram Avinu, you know, making the Ribbono Shel Olam again, you know, the God of Shemayim Ba'aretz, like those references, all may establish that we're not just talking about the impressiveness of the feat, the range, and magnitude, or even the scope of it. But again, this whole, you know, that's like singular to the character of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you know, being a Yotzer of Shemayim Ba'aretz is also part of, in a way, the Imitatio Dei. You know, this would all qualify as Monday, right? We're good. So, from that point of view, again, you know, whether it's benad, you know, the benadam lamakom, benadam lachavero, or the ruchnius and the gashmius, however you want to characterize it, you know, that becomes a different perspective on why this might be a kinyan. Now, again, to be honest, I don't think that's what the Meiri has in mind. He just says, you know, what he says. We have language. You have it? I think I have it. So maybe that proves more like what I'm saying a little bit, right? I guess if it was just the unequivocal me, you know, she'asa, you shouldn't really need that.
Yeah, I'm saying the Nuri Yosef says you don't need anything else, but the Meiri, I think, does say just it doesn't hurt you. I mean, Yeah.
I hear that. Okay. So maybe, yeah, the Ruki Yosef says that. I didn't see that. He just says, if you say Misha Omar, Misha, Baruch Shemayim Baruch will be enough. Okay. So I hear that. I mean, you can't have a discordant or an inaccurate note. So saying Misha Asa Shemayim Baruch, according to the Miri, is not bad. But you still need more. I hear. Okay. Either way, this is the way that I would suggest that we approach it.
The expression Kodesh Shemayim Baruch also has Kel, in source from the Torah, has Kel El Yom coming before it.
Has what?
Doesn't it have in Shem Kel El Yom coming before it when it appears in the Torah?
Okay, and therefore?
So that could be part of the reason as to why it would need the Shem Hashem before it, or maybe a reason to say why.
Oh, you mean if that's the Makar? Well, he doesn't say. I mean, Mir doesn't quote Kodesh Shemayim Baruch, but and again in the pasuk, the fact that that you have the original reference isn't strange. I mean, in its context, it makes a lot of sense. But it's an interesting ha'ara, I would say. What'd you say? I don't think it. I mean, the Miri doesn't emphasize it, right? But it's a good. If you're looking for a paradigm, I don't think you have to be limited by the fact that the pasuk happens to mention. But I guess it's noteworthy, put it that way. It is noteworthy. Okay. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that, I'm not sure where you draw the line in all these things and how much, you need from all of it. But these are two broad perspectives on, I guess, how one can look at Kinuyim. Yeah.
First of all, I think you have to read the rest of the line that you read realize that it's not what Ari is saying.
It's not?
He's not saying you have to say the Shem Hashem also. He's saying that you can say Shem Kinoi or the Beirish Mishas Hashemayim Baretz, and that's why the Gemara says you say Hashem Shachai. So all those are Chayav, and even though Rachel and Chana are not Nimchakin, so your Kavana is Lamisha Nikra Nikra.
So let's read the whole thing. One second. Nishba Ohuzba Bashemayim Baretz Avolisha Kavanaso Lamisha Baram. Eino shvua klal ad shiyaz kishem okinui o shiyom b'verish misha osa shmai b'aretz. What's v'husha pirei shachar?
I'm not talking about the person taking the shvua. I'm talking about the Gemara. The Gemara is mufarish after that. That's what the Gemara is saying.
Oh, I mean the Gemara. V'husha pirei shachar kain be'adni b'yud kebab kei b'shaka b'tzofet b'racham b'chana b'archa p'ayim b'rav kesed b'kol ha'kinuim re'lu chayavim. Afal pi... Okay. No, so what I was saying is that the Gemara is saying something more fundamental, and that is that since Shemayim Ba'aretz, Shemayim Ba'aretz aren't necessarily intrinsically, connected to the Rabbanu Shalom, right? As opposed to Chanan V'Rachum, which for the reasons that I discussed yesterday and repeated quickly today, and expanded on a little bit, are. So I'm just saying, if you... I don't have any problem, really. I think you could use a lot... You could argue that it requires a lot less than the threshold that I'm suggesting to qualify, even as a chefta shel shem, never mind as just a reference point. But I do think that is a way to read the Gemara. I'll just give you an example. It's going to come up in a second anyway, and that is in the continuation. The Gemara has a different example, not an example of what I'm saying now, but. I guess a little bit, in the in-between section. The word Shloma, right, which we're going to see in a moment, Shir HaShirim HaShir LeShlomo, which was, right, just something we just read. So the Gemara has this discussion, which we're going to get to in a second, whether the Shem Shlomo and Shir HaShirim, the Shem Kodesh, right, or Shem Cho, right? So, what the Ma'anav Kamina? What's that about? That's the Ramban. If somebody gives us over the Ramban, the Ramban has an interesting discussion about it. He initially suggests, and kind of the end, he goes back on it. The Ran doesn't even consider it. That maybe the Nafkamina will be in terms of it being Shemos and in the Chokim in its context. There you have it. Go ahead. Yeah. So this first day in the Ramban, go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry. So the first day in the Ramban is saying what?
That it's Kodesh in reference to whether or not you're allowed to.
Yeah. So even though it remains a kinui, and even though the word, you know, can also have a non-Kodesh kind of thing, you might say, well, that's, you know, intrinsically, impossible. Like when the Gemara thought that Chanun and Rachum and so on, the Gemara knew that, you know, you can use the term Chanun and Rachum, you know, b'chol, but the Gemara thought that the contextual, you know, if it's going to be a shame, so then in its contextual usage, right, it becomes, you know, Shemos, She'enem Nimchakim. But one would have thought, you know, and that is probably the majority view, even the Ramban is going to end up, you know, predominantly holding this way, that when the Gemara turns its back on this idea and says, no, it's a kinui, and that's why it's nimchak, what they mean is anything that's a kinui, anything that isn't an absolute shame, right, is going to be, nimchakim. Because there's a difference between, either because it's not really a shame at all, or again, it's not an intrinsic shame, it's a contextual shame, you know, therefore there's no such din. But the Ramban is proposing a middle status that, you know, Shlomo is, you know, where it's Kodesh, it's Einan Nimchakim, even though, he's not saying there it becomes, he's not even saying there it becomes a shame, Mina Shemos, and not a Kinui Mina Kinuyim. He's still calling it, do you have language again, one more time?
Yeah,
So he's basically saying there are two types of kinuyim, right? There's a kinui which is not nimchak. No, it's back to, again, that's why, you know, kind of isolating and defining these havaminas is, I think, such an important thing. In the way the Ramban is going back to the havamina, but he's just saying, you know, when the Gemara turns its back on it, they've turned its back on things like Chanun Barachum, and, you know, obviously, Hagi Barha Noraha Elyon, and, you know, He'ozuz, those things as well. Because those are, so what's he saying? You know, he's either saying there are two types of Kinuyim, right? So he's either saying there are two types of Kinuyim. One is a Mitzarev, a Mithyaches, you know, to the Ribbono Shel Olam without having any kind of status of Kavtzah Shel Shem. And the other one does have a status of Kavtzah Shel Shem, albeit, you know, only in its context. Is that what he's saying? Or is he saying that, you know, every kinui is a Kavtzah Shel Shem of some sort, right? The only question is, you know, whether or not, it also has, by virtue of its contextual status, you know, also more of an intrinsic value as a chefza, not just as a, you know, as a shame without, you know, having that. So I'm not sure what the two levels of kinuyim are, but it sounds like Ramban. Then he goes on to say that there would be a difference between, just one second, between Shlomo and Shir HaShirim, right? And what? Not only Chanun and Rachum, that's a davar pashut. Obviously, he thinks it's a little bit more difficult, but still okay to distinguish between Melech Malchaya and even Hamelech HaKadosh. Just read, go ahead. Right, even if you say that Shlomo, right, is Kadosh, Legabi Mechika, Melech Malchaya is not going to, even though there's only one Melech Malchaya, I mean, it's not like Chanun and Rachum. So it's somewhere in between Shlomo, the source of Shalom, Misha Shalom Shalom, right, and Melech Malchaya. Why? Because what? Because, you know, again, Shalom, you know, is so divine, you know, as a characteristic, or so, you know, you can have maybe in, we know the Melech Malchaya is an unequivocal reference, but in the end of the day, you know, it still has a, I guess, a you know, parallel, you know, in you know, Caesar, the greatest, you know, the greatest king, you know, the king of kings, you know, in a quantitative way, I guess, right? But I guess Misha Shalom Shalom, again, it's an interesting perspective on that as well. Maybe that's so non-human, given again, you know, competition and man's quarrelsome, you know, competitive nature. And there's something just about, you know, shalom, which is so multifaceted, as we say. Sometimes, just like, you know, sometimes the best expression of Chanan Barachum is to wipe out Amalek, you know, to be, you know, to be strong against Achzarios, so too, right, we speak about shalom, right, in the context of waging war. We wage war for the sake of peace. And so whatever it is, you know, there are, basically the Ramban is providing a window into three levels of kinuyim, right? If you want to say, you know, the with the Meiri and the Mukhe Yosef, maybe there are four levels of kinuyim, meaning there's Shlomo, there's Melech Malchaya, right? And we'll see in a second, because you didn't read that part. Melech HaKadosh also, or not?
Sorry,
yeah, just for...
Alright, so he says that Melech Malchaya because Shari is a kino of Eino Shem, Vidam Melechan Rachel, Amuto Makos, Shari Melech HaGadol Ani, Melech HaKadosh, Yotulim Chaka.
So that's even bigger Chiddush, right? That Melech HaKadosh is Mutalim Chaka. Because one would have thought, you know, that's the interface, just like I was saying, you know, about a potential Shemayim Ba'aretz, you know, Borei Shemayim Ba'aretz. The idea of a Melech HaKadosh, of Kedusha and Malchus, you know, political, you know, and sovereign, you know, and power, you know, integrated with, you know, sanctity, you know, with which is Ruchnius, but even more so, which is also Prisha, you know, and so on. You'd think that that would be a signature, even more so than Shlomo would have thought. I would have been very comfortable if the Ramban, you know, had said Melech Malchaya, Melech HaKadosh, Shlomo, or at least Melech HaKadosh and Shlomo. Right, but he's pretty convinced of it, that you can be Mochek. Keep going.
So in reference to Shavua, that gets in the door.
Yeah, the answer is that these things are kinuyim. They're just not kinuyim legabe mechika. They're kinuyim legabe Shavua, which we'll discuss in a second. Or...
And then he gives a second shot. He says, Yinami kamash mo'am peishuvi kakra gaburche v'a'a shlomo v'shir shirim lo risi asofer nenem b'mil melchot b'hen.
Yeah, so he says the Rambam never mentions anything about this, and no one else says it either. So that's why it sounds like in the end he's not so convinced about it. But he's not chozer either. The Ran and others, when they discuss this, they don't even bring up the possibility. They just say straight out that Shlomo, you know, is a shame kadosh legabe shavua and legabe pshat in the pasuk. But definitely not in terms of mechika. But what I'm trying to demonstrate is that there are levels. So again, you know, we have, Shemayim Va'aretz, or Misha Bara Shemayim Va'aretz, Borei Shemayim Va'aretz, or Kone Shemayim Va'aretz, right? Then you have, you know, Chanun V'rachum, and, you know, Hagadol Hagibar V'hanora, right? Could have been mechalik between them too, in theory. And then you have, you know, Melech Malchaya, Melech HaKadosh, Shlomo. These are all, yeah. Ellie.
So, first of all, is there a name Shlomo enough? Just that former proper name,
the latter isn't. Right, but it means, first of Misha Shalom Shalom.
Right, I mean, that's how the rites mean. It's all, I mean, structurally.
Oh, it's someone's name as opposed to an office.
Yeah.
Even though the Melech Malchaya is probably more than a minu. He's probably... I hear that. Okay. And Melech HaKadosh also? I mean, it always remains descriptive. It's not a name.
Yeah.
It's not a name based on the characteristic.
Right.
But maybe that itself... So I like that. I think that's true. But maybe what I would wonder is that independently responsible for the chiluk, or is that itself is the reason that we don't say, you know, Makor HaShalom or something like that? Maybe the reason that we give it a name is precisely because it's name givable, you know, to the Rabbanu Shalom, because it's an intrinsic or more amorphous, subtle, divine thing. So I think what you're saying is absolutely true, and I'm just wondering whether or not that isn't part of the story, I guess.
Also,
I knew there was going to be an also. Yeah, go ahead.
The Ramban has a unique understanding of what it means to be a kinyan. He says that tel and shema are a kinyan. It just means that, it sounds like he just thinks that...
No, I think that's really interesting. I was going to get back to that in a second.
Right.
Because the words kale and odon, as we know, like Shlomo, do have sometimes a chol usage.
Right. It sounds like that's just because...
So what he's proving from there is you can have something which is, you know, something on the border between. You know, most people think that kale and adnus is a real shame, right? So you can have a shame with, you know, that is on the border of kinui, and therefore you can have a kinui that is on the border of shame. And it doesn't really matter. It's almost become cement. I mean, there are things, and again, the trick in all these things, as we're trying to explain, once you get away from unequivocal, like, references to talk about, like, intrinsic, designation or identification, right? So you're talking about very subtle things. You know, so how much is the general, you know, yeah, I mean, you could say, oh, because the Rabbanu Shalom is the ultimate kale and the ultimate adon, right? That's a little subtly different. It's not just a matter of semantics and saying, you know, there's only one kale and adon, and when we speak about people like that, we're saying that, you know, they're acting like, or in their smaller sphere of activity, you know, they are the parallel to, you know, the, right? So I guess there are always three possibilities, right? The name or the terminology comes, you know, from the real world or from the imperfect world or from the finite world, right? And, you know, we just have no better usage or better, you know, vocabulary, so we use it also about the Rabbanu Shel Olam, but really intrinsically, these are human or finite terms, right? Or the opposite, right? Some of these terms are infinite, omnipotent, you know, omniscient, whatever the case may be. They're divine terms, right? And we use them inaccurately, right? But, you know, again, because of our Ruach Memalala limitations, as it happens, and but they always, you know, have that paradigm context or connotation, right? Or something in between, something where you have a term that, you know, has a human aspect and a divine aspect, and the difference is either quantitative or qualitative. I suspect that the difference is always, you know, qualitative. And then again, in its, you know, connection to spirituality and its multidimensionality and complexity,
right?
You know, going back to what I was, you know, the model of what I was saying about Chanan and Rachum and you know, and even Melech Malchaya and Borei Shamayim Va'aretz and so on. So I think that this is the question, and I think you're totally right. The Ramban, by quoting Kael and Adon, is trying to say, listen, anyways, the divide, you know, between shame and kinui is a lot more amorphous, you know, than you would think. Because things that we, you know, think are just kinuyim, like Shlomo, may really be more than that.
Okay.
And things that we consider to be intrinsic shamos, you know, may be, you know, either less than that or more flexible than that. And therefore, the idea that, you know, some, you know, where you draw the line in terms of nimchakim, you know, isn't going to be so simple. I think that's what the Ramban is trying to say with that.
So, I guess it just touches on a general issue that I'm just trying to understand, which is that, so, I mean, it seems like different Rishonim are working with different Hagdaras of Kinoi. Is it even so clear that we can even talk about whether Kinoi can be a shame for certain understanding to be simple read just my admissions may be that all Kino is just any description of Hashem which doesn't achieve the status of being ashamed.
Well, that's, I think those are two things that we've been discussing all along. I think that definitely is very easy to read that that's the Matzkana Sagamara. I mean, that's exactly what we've been talking about. Right? I think there are two ways to read the Shaka Matari of the Gemara.
I don't mean just to refer to that list of things which fit under that.
I'm saying, just so for example, take the Baruch Shemayim Barah. And instead of saying what I just said about, what I was trying to explain about Baruch Shemayim Barah, if you ask me the question, is Baruch Shemayim Barah a kinui? Right? So I would say, if all you need is an unequivocal reference, then of course it is. And if it, you know, requires that it also be some sort of shame, right? Then, you know, then you have to go into this, you know, Monday-esque, you know, kind of a discussion about what it means to be Borei Shemayim Va'aretz. We don't need any of that if all we need is a reference, and it's not really a shame, and the Rai is that it's Nimchak. I'm only now showing in the Ramban, right, that the Ramban considers the possibility that, you know, you could say there's something in between kinui and shamos, or you can say that there are two types. It sounds like he thinks that there are two types of kinuyim. There are kinuyim that in context are shamos of some sort. And although it sounds like, you know, they wouldn't achieve, you know, the status of a shame, you know, they would be shamos legabe the Isra Mechika, but they wouldn't necessarily be in the status of shame in other areas where kinui might not help. Right? And, you know, it sounds like you think there are two levels of them. So I'm just trying to show that I think this is the issue. Yeah?
A couple of things. First of all, is it okay that the Ramban is talking about Adon, not just the letters Aleph, Dalid?
Aleph, Dalid with nothing else?
Yeah, it's like Rabbeinu Hanan, though. That's Inon.
Well, yeah, if he holds that way, but I don't think, I mean... Assume that since he's also saying Kale, I think he just doesn't want to spell out Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. I think the reference is to the fact that the Gemara is going to say that Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud is sometimes has a chol meaning in Torah, meaning referring to the discussion of Avraham Avinu. I think. No, I can't be 100% sure. But so then it's a good parallel, albeit from the other side, meaning predominantly weighted towards the Ravon Shalom, of course, but you know, it's a parallel in a way to Shlomo, where there are some Lashonos Chol and there's some Lashonos, you know, Kodesh, and the, you know, the predominant one is, let's say, Kodesh. That's what I'm assuming. I could be wrong. Again, Kael and Elokim, we certainly find, you know, as reference to Malachim, sometimes reference to people. And let's remember those of the Sanhedrin people, right? We'll remember that, you know, Dayanim Bumchem, as we discussed a lot, Elohim, of course. Elohim, Elohim, you know, Lashon Kol, Lashon Kodesh, is another, you know, great example of what we're talking about. Yeah, what else?
Just going back for a second. Just,
yeah.
If you wanted to disagree with Meiri, how would you review the line, Hacha Kevin Hita Shemayim Ba'aretz, Bishamayim Ba'aretz Kamar?
Hacha?
That the reason why Shemayim and Aretz is different is because since there is a Shemayim and Aretz, when you say those two, you could just be referring to those entities.
Right. I think the Meiri, I think the Meiri is not interpreting the Gemara the way I did. Is that what you're asking?
No, I'm asking how could you disagree with me? I'm asking how would you understand that line? Meaning that line is clear.
In the Gemara?
Yeah, that line clearly implies that the reason why Shemayim and Aretz don't work is because you could interpret his statement as referring to specific entities of Shemayim
and Aretz. May mean because Shemayim and Aretz have an independent significance. They were created, but they are not associated with. I mean, they're like every other creation. They're the creation of the Ribbono Shel Olam, but they don't. But they also have a life of their own. Like I was saying, you can even there are people who worship Shemayim and Aretz, right? So. There are some people who worship Shemayim. Again, I don't want to get into the history of idolatry, but some people, you know, worship Shemayim Ba'aretz as a means and as a vehicle, the same way that, you know, they worship other things, like, you know, like the Rambam explains in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, when he tries to explain, you know, how Avodah Zarah, you know, began and how it spread, and so on. What I call the confusion of means and ends, and so on. But some people, the phenomenon of worshiping, powerful things or big things, is well documented too. As like independent, forces. I think a way to understand the Gemara is simply that, unlike Chanon v'Rachum, which are characteristics associated so strongly, with the Rabbonu Shel Olam, Shemayim v'Aretz, they were created and now they're separate. The astronomers will tell you that, and
which is why we're able to interpret your ambiguously. That's why you're referring to the first.
No, so that's why even if I was saying that. I'm the one who's saying that even if you were to say, Misha Asa Shemayim, I was suggesting that in theory one could disagree with the Me'iri and the Mukayosin. But if you read the Gemara in a certain way, you could say that even though we understand exactly what you're referring to, this isn't if a kinui requires some semblance of Chefta Shel Shem Hashem. Something partaking of the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? Then maybe the midos of Chanan v'Rachum and Hokel HaGadol HaGibor v'Hanora do that more than Misha Bara Shemayim v'Aretz, unless you think that Bria Shemayim v'Aretz isn't just a fact, but it also, that's why I was working hard to say all the other things about its theological implications. I don't think the Me'iri is doing that at all. I think the Me'iri just wants to know that you have something that unequivocally refers to Kadosh Baruch Hu. End of story. What I was saying was maybe you need something for it to be a shame that doesn't just refer to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but that partakes of his, divinity. And if Shemayim v'Aretz are going to do that, then we have to say some of the other things I was saying. But I think that's easy to read in the Gemara, what I'm saying. I don't think there's anything contradictory about it. The Gemara is just saying Shemayim v'Aretz don't have that. They're, separate entities. They're created entities. Very important, very impressive, but not, divine, not divine references objectively that would qualify as a shame if you need more than a reference to the author, more than a tziruf, but you need an actual chetz shel shem. Okay, sorry, it seems like we're still stuck. Okay, yeah.
All right, yeah. So I go back to the Ramban for a quick second. I think that part of the motivation for the chad between Shlomo versus Amalek HaKadosh and Amalek Malchaya is not just like the Elohim pronoun versus like proper name.
Yeah.
I think it's also a question of context. And then when Shir Ashir Mashali Shlomo, it's clear that Shlomo is being used as a name.
Nice, could be.
As opposed to when we talk about Ant Amalek Malchaya, so there. Whenever you say
it's a minui.
Speaking to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, they can hear that Malchaya is kind of a certain praise to Kadosh Baruch Hu.
Right. It's not a name. It's not a designation.
It's not a name. You say it's a praise. And it could be something.
And Melech HaKadosh also. He's saying these are adjectives.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem, Melech HaKadosh. You are Melech HaKadosh. That's a praise of support.
It's not a noun. It's an adjective.
Yeah.
We're not a hyphenated noun either.
So I think it's very much based on context.
Right. I'm just saying, what you're saying isn't so different than Ali. You're just adding the context as well. What I said to him, I would still say to you, and that is, that's a good point. I do think it's a good point, technically separate from what he's saying. And I'm still also not sure whether or not it's not a coincidence, right, that Shalom is spoken of that way and Malchus, even the combination of Malchus and Kedusha is spoken of in that way. That comment is, I think, still...
Right, that's a question you can ask in, like, Shira,
yeah, 100%. Okay, sorry that's taking so long, but again, these are very, obviously, important things. So let me just take, since we're talking about, the theological and philosophical parts of this, you can't not, right? I think that's what the topic is. So, let's just, take a step back again and understand a little better, what this is all about. And that is that, of course, when you speak about any topic of Shemos Hashem, you're obviously talking about this kind of an interface, and you confront, right, this whole conundrum, right, that the Rambam and others, were so, so, trying to find the right word, you know, they were so intrigued with it and so disturbed by it. And that is that the use of language, which is just, you know, a symptom in a way, and a particularly important symptom, going back to the Ruach Memalala, you know, idea that, that part of Kedushas HaAdam and B'Tselem Elokim, you know, is the capacity to articulate, and that's really what distinguishes, you know, man from other creatures. So, you know, even in our ability to speak, our language, you know, is by definition inadequate when it comes to the Ribbon Shalom, because, you know, he, you know, B'Shafir Chevyon, you know, Kael Nistat there, and, you know, he's the Melech Malchaya and the Melech HaKadosh, and for all these reasons, we intrinsically can't use, you know, descriptive language that is close to being accurate. It's by definition something that eludes us. The fact that it eludes us definitionally is not anything to, you know, to shake our emunah. On the contrary, it's structured in, it's built in. You know, it's part of the mystery. You know, and if anything, it just, you know, it's a certain mystique mystery, but it's not disturbing. Right, but the conundrum is that on the one hand, you know, we can't, and on the other hand, we must, right? Because to basically to attain any kind of meaning in our lives, right, we have to find a mechanism, we have to find vehicles to access, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam. But by definition, his kadosh, 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 you know, status. And the inability even to articulate in like a very elemental way, you know, is a huge obstacle. So on the one hand, it's an obstacle; it's a necessary obstacle, and on the other hand, it's an intolerable, you know, obstacle. So the result is, you know, where you get, you know, what the Rambam calls the doctrine of negative theology or negative attributes, right, which helps you a little bit. You know, and I think before the Rambam, in the Amuna Rama already, you know, he has, you know, this idea, and others, you know, Dibra Torah Kelashon B'nei Adam, which is the same idea. The Rambam always calls it that, both in Mor Nebuchim and in Yana Chazaka and elsewhere, Pirush Mishnayos, right, Dibra Torah Kelashon B'nei Adam, which basically means, you know, we do our best, we approximate. There are parallels, there are negative, there's action attributes, and there are negative attributes. I mean, when we say X, we mean it's not, you know, anti-X or negative X. So we, you know, we kind of fumble around, and we do the best that we can. So in a way, that's true for Tefillah, right, which is a dialogue with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and it's true for, you know, it's true on a level of articulation and language, but it's also true just in terms of our thoughts, and it's you know, it's intrinsic to the entire enterprise of Avodas Hashem. But when it comes to Shemos Hashem, more particularly, you know, whether we're talking about Tefillah or other categories, negative and positive, Shvua B'Shem Hashem. You know, as a positive, you know, Klala and Megadef and you know, some of these others which are negative. So this problem that we encounter, you know, is geometrically, you know, intensified, because the whole idea of Shemos Hashem is like inherently paradoxical. But as I said before, on the other hand, you need Shemos Hashem, and you need, you know, language that you can use, and mechanisms in Avodas Hashem that you can use, because otherwise, like, what's the point? Right? There's no point to existence. So this, we'd call it paradox, dialectic, whatever you want to call it. You know, the halacha's perspective on it, you know, is obviously very crucial. So you get, you know, both sides of this dialectic: the inadequacy on the one hand, and the urgency and the indispensability of finding, you know, accurate and proper language and being careful about it and respectful about it, on the other. So invoking Shem Hashem, which is impossible and, you know, absolutely maybe the most necessary thing, right, is something that, you know, is a source of Yira and Pachad, right? You talk about, you know, Kola'am, you know, Korim u'mishtachavim k'shehayu, you know, Shomim as Hashem ha'mefurash yotze mipiko in Gadol, right? In Yom Kippur, you have, you know, the pronouncing of the Shem ha'mefurash, you know, many times. That's part of the, one of the ways of organizing Avodas Yom Kippur. And again, the Hishtachavoy in the Mikdash, it wasn't just a spectacle, it was also spectacle, but it was a way of Kal Yisrael participating in the Avoda that, you know, only the Kohen Gadol could do, right? And only he could enter into, again, same kind of problem, Lifnai v'Lifnim. The idea of Kedushas HaMakom and a Mishkan and a Mikdash is the, you know, Makom parallel to the language problem, essentially. And that's where you have, like, the two of them, you know, coming together, converging, where you have the role of Shem Hashem said 10 times, also a symbolic important number, right? The three viduyim out of the mouth of the Kohen Gadol, and, you know, Lashem Chatos, which is pronounced on the Seir Nasa Bifnim. And you have this, you know, this pronouncing of Shem Hashem. And in general, Birchas Kohanim, and what Shem was used for that. So the whole idea of Shemos Hashem is really part of this whole story. It's very central, you know, as I say, even indispensable. And, you know, Kishem Hashem Ekra Havugodol Elokeinu, where we spent our first semester of Mondays talking about, you know, why Talmud Torah is considered Shem Hashem. You know, and Ramban in his Akdama to his Perush Al HaTorah, as well as in Sefer Mitzvos, you know, counting Birchas HaTorah, Kishem Hashem Ekra, as a din d'oraisa, and as a separate point in minyan mitzvos, and developing the idea that essentially Limud HaTorah, Talmud Torah, is a Shemos Hashem. That's the idea. It's creating an access, but in a divinely directed way that somehow, despite all of the paradox and all of the, you know, mystique, you know, somehow that's the gift and that's how it works for us. So when we speak about Shemos Hashem in different contexts, and then there's like a hierarchy, you know, a shame of ayin base osios and, you know, mem base and, you know, and then a shame of mefurash and a shame of meyuchad and a kishem shani nichtav, kishem shani nikra, you know, and then other shemos which are ein nimchakim, and then you have several categories of shemos maybe that are nimchakim or otherwise known as kinuyim, or shemos nimchakim and kinuyim, however you want to, you know, call it. So this whole hierarchy, this range of different shemos that are used in different contexts, you know, in tefillah and in avodas Hashem on the one hand, and also used in different institutions in halacha and have different status, mekalel, megadev, birchas kohanim, you know, and so on and so forth, right? That really becomes, against this background, the story. This is an access, right? But one which, by definition, you know, is very challenging, has to be very precise, and generates a certain kind of added yira. We talk about yiras Hashem or yiras Shem Hashem also, right? L'shaken shemo sham, you know, l'shich no tzidrashu, the idea of kedushas hamako, as I say, overlapping with Kedushas Hashem is in the Pesukim themselves. And when it's not explicit in the Pesukim, you know, the Mikdash is a place where the Ribbono Shel Olam allows his name, right, to reside, whatever that means. You know, how does a name reside, and what does a name have to do with a place? But that's exactly what it is. And, you know, even when it's not there, the Targum, Unklus, you know, puts it there. You know, when he talks about Kedushas HaShechina, invariably he associates it with Shem Hashem, the presence of Shem Hashem. So this is really what we're talking about, and therefore the you know that's why it's worth investing and understanding you know, what the implications of these different shemos are, and why, and what it means to have a hierarchy. Okay, so that's just, I guess, a little bit of for the background. There's the theological and philosophical aspects that, you know, you can't ignore, and you have to be careful about. And there's also, more importantly, you know, the spiritual need, you know, the religious urgency, and the dispensability of this. They, again, you have a similar problem, not only in Kedushas HaMakom and Kedushas HaShem, but in the general problem of anthropomorphism, right? And how we perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, generally, right? And again, here too, you know, it's Dibra Torah, Kilashon B'nei Adam, you know, Ayada Chazaka, and all of that. And here too, you know, the Rambam suggests that language is inadequate, but language, you know, is negative or active. The Chovos HaLevavos has, you know, some very strong words to say about, you know, balancing, you know, theological accuracy and a proper, I guess, religious perspective, you know, on the matter of, you know, anthropomorphism. Because again, as we know, in our tfilos and in our effort to inculcate in ourselves and in anybody else who we can, you know, be mashpiyan, you know, a sense of the imminence, you know, in addition to the transcendence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we use phrases, and we mean them, Avinu Malkeinu, right? And, you know, we personalize, and, you know, sometimes maybe too much, and sometimes maybe too little. But the reason that we do that is because we talk about Ki Chelek Hashem Amo, Yaakov Chevel Nachal Aso, we talk about Hashgacha Pratis, right? It's the Esod of Tefillah and of Nevuah and of anything having to do with Klal Yisrael, and anything having to do in some broader sense with Avodas Hashem. So on the one hand, there's like tremendous awareness, acknowledgement of transcendence, of the distance, and being very careful not to breach all of that. To breach that is to be nichnas, you know, lapardes, you know, and you know, that is something which can be, you know, a very dangerous thing. For most people, it's a totally inappropriate thing. At the same time, if we, you know, only emphasize the kel nistater part and the transcendent part, the kadosh kadosh kadosh, so then you know, you don't really have a kesher, and you know, you lose, you know, the ikar in terms of purpose. So this idea, you know, the Chovos HaLevavos says you have to balance these two. He says, you know, educationally, when you have, you know, an audience that doesn't really understand the transcendence part, you know, and especially you have, you know, chinuch, you know, of children who you're trying to inculcate, you know, values, emunah and bitachon and all these things. So, you know, the avinu, I mean, these are my words, not his, but this is kind of what he's trying to convey. You know, the Avinu Malkeinu part, you know, becomes very critical. I mean, people have to feel that, you know, they have this kind of access, and that there is this, you know, relationship. As, again, difficult as it can be theologically and philosophically, you know, to describe. But, you know, our belief, our Emunah, kind of defies, you know, all of that. And then, you know, you also don't want to, you know, reduce it, you know, to something that is crude and that is overly physical and that undermines or undercuts the integrity of the transcendent part. So it's always, just like there's always this, you know, Shamayim and Aretz dialectic, you know, the Ruchnius and the Gashmius. The same is true for the anthropomorphism and the anti-anthropomorphism. And that is really also the case for having Shemos Hashem, having a hierarchy of Shemos Hashem, and on the one hand it being an opportunity that you invoke, you know, in certain spiritually opportunistic contexts, and at the same time imposing like tremendous you know, reticence, you know, and even, you know, real fear, you know, kashra shvuasa, the idea that, you know, people shvua b'shem, shvua b'nekita skefetz, that psychologically, you know, people were wary of all that. They're, you know, we know that. So we even had in the Gemara earlier, right, and certainly you have in other Gemaras, Bar Mitzvah and so on, people lose their cases, you know, even when they were telling the truth because they didn't want to take a shvua b'shem Hashem or a shvua b'sefer Torah, whether it's good or not, whether that's a good tactic, you know, or a bad tactic, you know, it reflects a certain, you know, phenomenology that says a lot. So this is really the issue that we're contending with, you know, here in this sukkah. Okay. So where were we? What were we up to? Having said that, let's go to the next point in the Shaka Vitaria, and then we'll pin down more things as we go along. What were we up to? Somebody else, footy read yesterday, right? Let's see. Liam, want to read? Right, so what are we up to? Ton Rabbanan. Yeah. Is that what we're up to? Oh, no, we're not up to there. Okay. We're up to... Kosav Aleph Lamed. Go ahead. Me'elokim.
Kosav Aleph Lamed Me'elokim. Yud-Hei Me'elokim.
Yeah. So that's, of course, the Kiddush there being... The full name, I guess, is a more, whatever, powerful name, more intrinsic name, right? But even the beginning of it already stands on its own, and therefore we're being told that's still Shemos She'enam Nimchakim, right? Either the Chiddush is that it stands on its own, or you might have thought that, you know, since relative to what, to a fuller expression, you know, it falls short. So maybe that's not a, maybe that's not, you know, relative to itself. It's a shame, you know, shenimchak. And we're being told that isn't the case because it's still an intrinsic shame, even if it's relatively, you know, or in a relative sense, missing something. So that's important. Again, you have all these interesting havaminas about what would determine, you know, nimchak. Okay. Okay, Shin Dalad Mishakai.
Shin Dalad Mishakai, Aleph Dalad Adoshem, Sadi Beit Mitzvakos, Hare Zeh Nimchak.
Oh. So this is the girsa that we have. So again, what would be the Hava Mina otherwise? Because the Gemara wants to know. The what?
The different level of the Shakai and Mitzvakos we see now are different, are not the same thing as Elohim or Mitzvakos.
Oh, yeah, exactly. In other words, is what's significant. Now, the Gemara has a Havamina now to say when they're telling us this, they're telling us that you might think, that's, is it because Yud K or, you know, Kale are, albeit again, truncated, but they're still Shemos? Or is the point that they are, that even the letters that spell Shem Hashem, right, take on like a certain Kedusha? Because it's, you know, Tchilas Shem Hashem, or, you know, they're Osios. Mishem Hashem, right? If it were the latter rather than the former, then Shin Dalid and what else is it? And Sadi Beis, you know, would also be qualifying. So Kamash Malan, in order to be a Shem Shein Nimchak, it's not enough that you be, either it's not Mitzura, if it's not called, you know, Osios Mishem Hashem, what makes it, I mean, it is practically, maybe Al-Pidin, it's not considered that. Right? Or, even if it is, that's not what's koveya for nimchak. For nimchak, it has to be an intrinsic shame. And this is not. This is osios min, but not more. Now here you have a different girsa also. What's the different girsa? The Rach. Isaac made reference to it before. What's the Rach's girsa? That Aleph Dalet is different. Why is Aleph Dalet different? Right, Rashi Tosfos quotes it here in the first Amud Aleph. Right, Aleph Dalet Min Hashem Eino Nimchak. The Tema, the Ma'ishno Mitzadi Beis Mitzvakos. right? B'shin dalid mishaka. If you have that girsa, dinim chakin, lefi shein shem b'fnei atzmo. What's the answer? V'shema mishum d'shem miyuchad hu yesh lahachmir b'yoser. So meaning, what we just said, you know, comes roaring back once again. But we were just wondering, I mean, the Gemara had to tell us, they had to preclude the idea that, you know, shame, that osios mina shame, also have a certain kedusha. Or the fact that they could potentially spell shame Hashem gives them a kedusha. Right? And the answer is that's not true. So maybe that's not true for stam shemos, you know, she'inam nimchakim. That maybe for shema miyuchad, you know, that is... So really there are two assumptions. Number one, that shema miyuchad, even vis-a-vis mechika, has a different status. You might have said, oh, when it comes to, whatever shema miyuchad's special din or special stature is, right, you know, maybe it's no different than any of the other shemos shenin nimchakim legabe the mechika. That is a common denominator. Apparently that isn't true. That's number one. That even regarding the chika, there's a separate thing. And number two, that we consider, even though the words, even though the letters don't stand on their own, but shame, but osios min shema miyuchad, to have a certain intrinsic kedusha. Right? Yeah. What's what? Sorry? Yeah, what about it? Well, UK stands on its own anyway.
It's not one of the seven
listed.
It's not?
It's not one of the seven. Oh, is that true? Mm-hmm. So you want to know, one second. But what did we say before? Aleph Lamed Yud K is Eino Nimchak. Okay. What do you mean? No, because it's me wisened in independence.
All right, we already see that if you have a chelik of the name.
I mean, according to Rabbeinu Hanan,
I'll be asking. Yeah. Well, the question of Rabbeinu Hanan.
Say again?
The question is not Rabbeinu Hanan. The question should have already been on UK.
According to Rabbeinu Hanan.
Even not according
to Rabbeinu. Good question. Let me think about that. I'm not sure. Okay. Let me think about that for a sec, for a little bit, and then I'll get back to you on that. Okay. So... Either way, this is very big chiddush that the shame, these shemos are different, and their difference also manifests itself within shame she'eino nimchak, as I say, and even with regard to the letters themselves. Yeah.
So is it possible that according to like the idea that the four letters of shem agnes are really also kind of
yud kei vav kei parallel?
The aleph dalet really refers to the yud kei.
Yud kei, yeah. Yeah. Some people do say that.
So then, it kind of. Forgetting the machmir of the once you're kind of getting into the shame, you can give independence to the Aleph Dalet itself.
Right. Except that, Shmuel is suggesting that, and some people say this, that Aleph Dalet Nun Yud Yud Kei Vav Kei, because it's, you know, the shame anichta.
Nun Yud, according to some, is the overlap of the first letter Yud Kei Vav Kei and the last Yud of Adnos, like the, each letter.
Yud Yud.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Yud Kei.
No, like when we say Yud Yud, referring to Yud Kei Vav Kei. It would be Yud Aleph Vav, like the overlap in terms of, like.
Say it again. Maybe I misunderstood you.
You know how, like, we refer to Yud Kei Vav Kei sometimes as Yud Yud.
Yeah.
So according to some, like, it's an overlap of the first Yud Kei Vav Kei and the last Yud.
Less of Adni.
Yeah, and the first Yud is to the Aleph. The Hay would be to the.
Okay, and well, yeah, I understand that. What and point?
So then, like, it really is connected. So the Aleph Dalet would be the. Reflection of the Yud K, and therefore Yud K.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You mean just trying to illustrate it in that way? Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So some people do suggest that, and that's connected to Loka Shem Shani Nichta Bani Nikra, that there's always a parallel between those two shemos. So then it's a din, not just in the osios which compose the shame you're saying, but it's because this is itself the equivalent of Aleph Dalet is the kriya equivalent of Yud K. That's what you want to say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Good. I was going to bench that, but okay. Very good. Okay, good. Let's continue.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is that? So Rabbi Yossi says that Tzvakos is not one of the Shemos Nimchak, Shein Nimchak. right? Because it's Nema after Yisrael. What, and then Gemara says Omar Shmuel.
Omar Shmuel and Alchir
Yosi. Yeah. So what's the story with that? What do you think? Is it such a bad thing that you know that Tzavakos is Botsesius Tzivosayas Ami Bnei Yisrael Beram Tzitzrayim? What does Shmuel think about it? So either maybe right, it's that again there are overlaps, but maybe the Ikar Tzavakos is a divine name. That's one possibility.
Or maybe Yisrael is actually divine. In
some oh, sense. Or maybe the possibility, maybe the you know it's Hia Nosenes, Botsesis Tzivos, that really the word Tzavakos does refer to Klal Yisrael. Right, but instead of that being something that detracts from Shem Hashem, that's what gives it its singular status. So this, of course, I always thought in connection with this, it could be other people mentioned. I just don't, not, I don't remember if anybody does or I've never seen it. That this goes very nicely with the famous Gemara in Brachos, where the Gemara speaks about, you know, the tefillin of. Of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, so the Gemara says, but you know, I only mean it as an example. The Gemara says in Brachos, and Avav Amud Aleph, Amar Rav Avinu Rabbanu Bar Yitzchak, Minayin Shakadosh Baruch Hu Miniach Tefillin, Shenemar Nishba Hashem Bimino Bezroa Uzo Bimino Zutora, Shenemar Mimino Eish Laslamo Bezroa Uzo Elu Tefillin. Hey, whatever this means, right? Hashem oz la moyitain. Again, we're talking about, you know, anthropomorphism and dibratorik l'shom b'nei adam, but symbolically, whatever this means. So then the Gemara says, minayim shad tefillin ozheim, v'ro kala ame aretz, ki shem Hashem nikra alecha, v'yor mimecha. Fine. Also one of those, shem Hashem, right? Nikra alecha, right? Relevant to us. V'yor mimecha. Okay. Then the Gemara says, tanya rab lozer agadol, omer elu tefillin shabarosh. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Hani Tefillin Demari Alma Maksivu. Ah, well, we all want to know that, right? So the Gemara says, Amar Lei Umi Ka'amcha Yisrael Goyachad Ba'aretz. So then the Gemara says, Umi Mishtabeach Kudsha Brichu Bishvachayu Di Yisrael. I mean, you want the Rabban Shalom's Tefillin should speak about Mi Ka'amcha Yisrael Goyachad Ba'aretz, about the praise of Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara says, In, yes. Dichsiv es Hashem hemarta hayom, v'Hashem hemircha hayom. Omer l'makadosh baruch hu Yisrael, atem asisuni chativa achas ba'olam, v'ani es eschem chativa achas ba'olam. Atem asisuni chativa achas ba'olam, shenemar, shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem echad, v'ani es eschem chativa achas ba'olam, shenemar, mikam cha Yisrael, go echad ba'aretz. Right? Okay. And then he says, well, what about the other batim? You have Kimi Goy Gadol, Ashrecha Yisrael, Hanis Elohim, Lasitcha Elyon. Fine, you get the basic idea. So this is a very, you know, it's an interesting Gemara. But it does, the question in the Gemara is very interesting. You know, the Rabbanu Shel Olam is defined by Klal Yisrael's singular character. And the answer is yes. Right, Mikam Chayisol Goyachad Ba'aretz Atem Asisuni Chativa Achas, you know, Ba'ola. So they always say in the name of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Mibarditchev that he, you know, was addressing the question like why it is that Klal Yisrael all call the holiday that we just celebrated Pesach. Right, and we call it Chag HaMatzos. Right? So I think there are other good explanations for that, probably some of which I have shared or suggested in pre-Pesach Shiurim. But his famous suggestion is that Klal Yisrael, based on these, he quoted this Gemara in Brachos, Davav Amin Aleph, and he said, oh, you see that Klal Yisrael always emphasizes the chasadim, the greatness of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And the Rabbanu Shel Olam, you know, he always accentuates the uniqueness and singular character of Klal Yisrael. So we call it Pesach because, you know, our gratitude, you know, Shepasach you know, al bate Yisrael b'mitzrayim, you know, and so on. And he calls it in the Torah chagamatzos, because he was impressed with our, you know, bitachon, you know, b'bihilu yotza b'mitzrayim, you know, that, you know, the bitachon that we had, that we, you know, left Mitzrayim, you know, without real food. So this same idea appears in other contexts, I think. The Or HaChaim, for example, says something similar. I think it's Or HaChaim. In trying to explain, like, the flip in, you know, the end of Kisisa and the beginning of Vayakhel, in terms of the order, the relationship between the Mishkan and Shabbos, right? So there you have, you know, Mishkan and Shabbos, and the beginning of Vayakhel, you have Shabbos and the Mishkan. So he also tries to, you know, make this kind of a suggestion that, you know, that these are two perspectives: the perspective of, you know, Shabbos is kavua v'kaima, and that's, you know, kivo shavas mikol v'lachto, that was created by the Ribono Shel Olam, but the avoda of the Mishkan is, you know, Klal Yisrael's Mesiras Nefesh. Again, I don't want to get too much into the Agadita part, but it just occurred to me that this idea of Tzavakos, you know, being connected with Klal Yisrael, so, and therefore not being ashamed she'eno nimchak, you know, may be another expression of this idea. Either the point is that's an additional, that's a shame levoy, you know, either a common denominator or a, you know, the Ribono Shel Olam is Tzavakos, and therefore Klal Yisrael became, you know, Tzavaos. And that's one possibility in reading the Gemara, the answer of the Gemara. But the other possibility is exactly this idea that Dafka, you know, Atem Asisuni Chativa Achas Ba'olam, that it's inappropriate, you know, for Shem Hashem. Even though it might be a different kind of Shem Hashem. Okay, let's continue. Yeah, so what do you make of that? So I think, again, there are two ways to understand that line. Again, the idea that you would treat prefixes and suffixes identically is certainly very reasonable. The idea is that they're just, you know, they're not part of the intrinsic Shem Hashem. And consequently, you know, you should, you know, they don't get that status. If somebody had said that we treat prefixes and suffixes the same way and, you know, both of them are enam nimchakim, that would have been, I think, a reasonable, it wouldn't have been probably, you know, obvious, but it would have been, you know, you'd say, listen, the prefix and the suffix, it's like an interesting objective question, whether prefixes and suffixes, you know, are extrinsic or they kind of, you know, become, either the question's about prefixes and suffixes or the question, you know, is about, you know, what's koveya, legabe di iser b'chika. Right, is it only the intrinsic words? It's still part of the whole world. It might be, not be part of Shem Hashem, but it's part of the word of Shem Hashem. Maybe the Yisra Mechika would apply to that as well. Okay, but that, we don't have that sheet. No one seems to be saying that prefixes are pein nimchakim. But the idea that prefixes are nimchakim and suffixes are not, that's interesting. So what do you think about it?
It could be that a suffix which describes Hashem as being related to something, whereas prefix describes something coming from Hashem, so it's describing not Hashem,
but
something else.
I think there are two ways. So one way, that's one way you're suggesting. Okay. Meaning what you're saying is that this might be something fundamental. Meaning the question of, that's why that works so well with the way I guess I set this up. I'm not saying that's why you said it, but meaning, you know, just what one could say, legabe the question, whether something, you know, that is extraneous to the, seemingly, you know, or could have been extraneous to the word, you know, integrates into the word, you know, itself, right, there maybe is a difference between a prefix and a suffix. Right? I mean, a prefix typically, you know, doesn't imply anything other than like a direction, like Bashem, Lashem, Kashem, you know. So maybe prefixes are more inherently like extraneous, is what I'm saying. Whereas the attachment, you know, to a suffix, you know, Elokeichem, Elokeihem, Elokeinu, Elokecha, you know, isn't just, you know, a direction or a source. You know, it's not something extraneous. Maybe it is, you know, there, you know, something, you know, is has a relationship with something, you know, that says something or that reflects on its own character. So again, more specifically here, in other words, Lashem, Bashem, Kashem, you know, doesn't really add anything. But Elokeinu, you know, Elokeichem, that the Ribono Shel Olam has a relationship with us, Klal Yisrael, with you as an individual, with you collectively, with a certain, you know, group, Elokeichem, etc. So that's part of that. That's also a divine characteristic, the ability to have that relationship. And the relationship itself, you know, is transformed. It's not just, oh, like a surface, you know, there's the subject and who the subject, you know, is connected with, right? You are transformed by the connection to that subject. And that subject's character is also defined by the capacity to have a relationship with you. So again, I hope I'm not, you know, making too much of this, but I think that is a very good explanation. Obviously, the simple reading of the Gemara could be different. It could just be the order. In other words, if the words or the letters themselves, right, you know, convey like a certain kedusha, so we might say, well, you know, when you do the la and the ba and the ka and the whatever, you know, so there's nothing there. And once you have Shem Hashem, so anything, you know, connected to the aftermath of the Shem itself, you know, becomes tafel, but kadosh tafel at that. I guess we'll go around. But yeah, let's do it quick because I didn't realize it's so late.
I guess what happened, I think it would just be that.
Just what?
Stopping a little short of where Rebbe was going with the suffix, he could say that the suffix are designating more specifically who you're talking about. Elohim, so the Avodah Zarah have really called Elohim, because Elohim, you're more specifically designating your plan.
All right. Okay, it's a little bit right, a little less than what I'm saying, but right, it's the same direction, right? Yeah. It's something that ends up being part of the definition, though. Okay. Yeah.
I was going to ask, like, based on what Rebbe was saying, whether, like, perhaps you could say it's a kinosh yud and chatam, like the chem becomes.
It is something like that. It could be something like that.
I mean, as opposed to just like being like kind of just.
I mean, like the Ramban. Maybe I don't think you need to, but you might. It's an interesting thought. I mean, in light of like what we were saying, like the Ramban about Shlomo. Yeah, Josh.
Just two interesting questions. If you put a prefix after you write the word, or you put a suffix before you write the shame.
Oh, you mean if you write it in that order?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I mean, you might say that, you know, you have to assume that, as a nafkamina, you mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but the question is, so is it really the order, or is it like, the meaningfulness, let's say, of what happens when you do it? That's, is it the order in the word, or is it the order in how you in how you write it? But I think that's interesting. I don't recall seeing that discussion.
It's in Sadok on the Rambam. It's Rabbi Yitzchak, so. Rabbi Sadok
on the Rambam? What's Rabbi Sadok on the Rambam? What?
Utsar Hamela.
Yeah? Is that discussion?
It's Stapi. Yeah.
Wow. Nice. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see what happens. You mentioned Rav Levi Yitzchak Mibarditchev, and like, you know,
I had a dream last night.
Right. You know, what are you going to do? Like the Magen Meisharim. Okay. Very good. So that's interesting. I would be mistopic whether it's a right nafkamina because of that
right.
Added point. But I think it's interesting. Okay. Ben, you look like you. Did you want to ask something? Or are you just stretching? Okay, let's continue just another minute or so, and then we'll stop. I'm sorry it's taking so long, but as you can see, these are interesting questions. We have to still pin down some of the additional Rishonim on them, but just to get through. Go ahead.
I'm Rav Huna Lachka here.
Yeah.
Kol Shem Hashem Mor B'Torah Avraham Kadosh Chut Mizeh Shuchol Shnei Mar Yomar Hashem Im Nam Lachdas Yechem Ben Echav Chanina Ben Acha Rabbi Yeshua Rabbi Lazar Ben Zariah Mishum Rabbi Lazar Hamodai Amro Av Zeh Kadosh Tzman Azla Hadamar Rabbi Huda Amar Rav Gidol HaKnesset HaKnesset Orchem Yotur HaGvalas Pnei Shechina Kiman Kosa Zuh.
Okay, so here I just want to, I don't want to go into so much detail, but again, just to kind of say what I've said in the past a little bit, and that is, and the same idea about Elohim and Dayanim Momchin, and I think that, you know, instead of just wondering whether something is Kadosh or Chol, even when we say that something like this is Chol, I think the point is that it's an intentional ambiguity. Obviously, there are other ways, you know, to for Avram Avinu to be speaking, you know, to the Malachim, you know, without using a name that is associated with the Ribbono Shel Olam, or vice versa, you know, for him to be telling Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, hold on, you know, I'm about to do Haknasas Archim, you know, so I'm going to put the Kabbalah's Pnei Hashchina on hold for a minute. You know, there are probably other words that could have been utilized, certainly. Other words that could have been utilized in the divine text, if, you know, that was the entire, you know, mutually exclusive story, one or the other. But I think that this is a great example of the idea that there really is, again, a convergence of two things, because it wasn't a choice, really, you know, of, you know, Ben Adam LaMakom versus Ben Adam LaChavero, as we discussed many times. The idea is, Atedati Ki Yoreh Elokim Ata, so, you know, Avraham Avinu is willing to sacrifice his son, but when it comes to Kabbalas, when it comes to Haknasas Archim, you know, then the Ribbono Shel Olam takes a second, you know, play. That would be very peculiar. And of course, that's not the point. The bigger point is to know when the best expression of Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina is Haknasas Archim, you know, as a kiyum. And therefore, the use of a phrase, you know, which is both Kodesh and Chol. At the same time, in other words, even when you're speaking to the Chol, you're doing it out of a sense of Kedusha, and so on, and vice versa, is, I think, the real point that you have here. I think that's also true in the Lot part of it, you know, because again, this is Lot's, you know, Avraham moment, but it's Lot's Avraham moment, you know, that is grotesque, you know, because he's not Avraham, you know, and the whole rest of, he's living in stone, you know, he's going to sacrifice his daughter, and so it's like his well-meaning and you know, grossly grotesque, you know, effort. So it's Kodesh and Chol in a different sense. And this, I think, is the idea in general when we find, you know, ambiguous language in the Torah, typically. You know, there is a predominant meaning, which is what Chazal discuss, obviously, but probably the usage, you know, has, or the intentional ambiguity, you know, has its additional function. Okay, let's continue. Kol Shem Hashem Mor B'Lot Chol, I just talked about that. Chutz Mizeh Shu Kodesh, Shenemar.
Shenemar Aleihem, Al Na Aduni, Hinei Na Matza Adel Chachim Enecha, Mi Sheish B'Yadu Lohem Mizeh Echi Yotz Zachar Baruch.
They didn't ask if they were going to win or not. They just, you know, said, should we go? Right? The other one, when they asked, was, go ahead. Then comes Kol Shlomo, which we already discussed a little bit. Kol Shol Mamur B'Shir Ashirim.
Kadosh. Shir L'Misha Shalom Shalom. Chut B'Zeh. Karmi Shali L'Fanai Elef L'Chal.
Elef L'Chal Shalom. All right.
Shalom L'Dei. V'Matayim L'Notrim Et Piro Et Piro Av Rabbanam.
Yeah.
V'Yish Omrim Avzecho. Hine Mitato Shal Shlomo Tzasi. Avzeh V'Lo Mibayu Ha'ich Ela Had Amr Shmuel Malchus L'Kat L'Chad M'Shit Av Alma Lo Me'anshe. Shneamar, Karmi Shali L'Fanai Va'Alef L'Chal Shlomo L'Malchusa D'Rakia. My time will not dream at Pirel Bakusa de Ara. Shmuel Logatanakama, Lokashomer, Alachama, Vish Omer Zakadosh, Zeho, Mutata, Vishmuel Amar, Kyoshomer.
Okay, keep going, just want to get to the dots.
Call the Kyle number in the Daniel Ho, Hut Mizashu Kadosh. Aunt Malka Melah Machaya, the Allah.
Okay, that we discussed already in the context of the Ramban. V'yeshom em avzeh kadosh, shenemar.
Shenemar, mari chamo l'tanecha u'pashra l'arecha. V'lan kamar, itak leitach medbuchan netzar kamar lei, sinotei mikmanihu, Yisrael milas kalaylu.
Eva kalaylu l'Yisrael. Okay, so we're going to stop here for the moment. Let's pick up tomorrow with Kinuyim and Rab Chanina, and then all the shitas, the Ran, the Rosh, the Ramban, the Rambam, the Ravid. Again, we'll try to go a little more quickly, but as you can see, some of the issues are really very fascinating. Okay, so we'll...